Welcome to MGO Podcast 13.6. Scott Frost, more like Scott Lost. Has anyone done that one yet? No? Yeah. Oh. So, our preseason read on Nebraska and our pregame read on Nebraska was that they were a very good team that couldn't stop shooting itself in the foot.
Indeed.
And
they are what they said we are.
I mean,
what they said they, yeah.
They just, it's just so, I would be really frustrated if I was a Nebraska fan because I'd be like, this is so close to working.
Yeah.
And then we just murder ourselves in extremely bad ways. And this was even less of a extremely stupid murder yourself way than most, but the fumble right at the end of the game and then...
Yeah, like I was getting frustrated for Nebraska fans while watching the rewatch because there are like missed assignments for the offensive line all over the place. They have guys lining up in the backfield when they shouldn't. They're just like...
Well, that doesn't count all the time.
Yes, according to people who were there, Harbaugh spent the entire break letting the referees know about it, too. So,
well, so that's kind of the summary of a 29-26 victory over, I was going to say Alaska Anchorage for some reason. Why was I going to do that?
Nebraska is the Alaska Anchorage of...
They
kind of are.
I'm completely mystified by myself right now. I'm Brian Cook.
I'm Seth Fisher.
This is the MGO Bug Podcast. And before we get started, we'd like to thank our sponsors. The MGO Podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have three retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com or find our stuff at mgoblogstore.com, including an inscrutable t-shirt about corn.
it was like some sort of company, right? Well, we can get into it later. It was like there was actually a Wolverine corn company.
Did someone get me one of those, by the way?
One of those shirts?
I want an inscrutable t-shirt about corn.
I'll get you one.
Thank you.
I will get you one. You know what you have to do is do another sponsor thing, but we'll get to that.
We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grant, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Signal Mail, From the Cheap Seats, which is the Sklar Brothers Podcast, and Prentice 4M, which is where we are right now. All right, so I guess we'll start with the offense, which didn't feel as good as it was, I think, because of all the field goals.
Yeah. I mean, they squandered some opportunities. I mean, the Cade was on and off. Like, the things that Cade normally does well, like, were a little bit off this game. His deep shot was terrible.
Yeah, there were a number of opportunities downfield, and they were missed. And
yeah, I mean...
Not all of them. Hit Sainer still barely.
Well, no, I mean that was a way over. Like he was so, but like
hit Sainer still barely.
He underthrew Johnston in single coverage. He underthrew Baldwin. He overthrew Baldwin at the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And then he had a bad read on that interception, which someone told me after the game was they caught a guy offsides, and so he was just kind of throwing it up. So, like, the coaches were not that mad at him for the interception, but it was still a terrible read.
Yeah, I mean, even if you think you have a free play, it's not like you were taking a shot downfield with that.
Right, right.
And also the guy, like, next to the receiver you threw to was the guy who was actually open.
Right, right. So, I don't know. That was the explanation I got for why the coaches were not furious about his first interception ever. But, I mean, it was a bad read. It was a bad read X.
Yeah, so they get these kind of drives that stall out, a couple of them very close to the goal line. One of them was a touchdown briefly.
Twice.
Until it was correctly overturned. And then you go and you look at the stats and, you know, Michigan's two main running backs averaged over 6 yards an attempt. And this is a team that absolutely shut down Kenneth Walker.
Yeah.
So, like, that's something.
Well, they both had huge runs. I mean, Corum had that bash run in the fourth quarter, which, I mean, he just outran everybody, and that was another one of those things, like the Washington game, I thought, where the safeties are so used to coming up to get to Haskins that, like, they just have no feel for what the angle is on Corum. And so, like, there's that run, and then Haskins, oh my God.
Hurdle of the century.
Like, I've not seen that.
That
stuff.
That might be the highest hurdle I've seen that actually resulted in yards after hurdle.
That's right. Like, normally, like, you can get a great hurdle, and then that will give you, like, 5 yards because
right.
they're going to knock you down afterwards. But, like, to hurdle and continue going, there isn't even a button for that on PlayStation.
I was extremely upset that he got tracked down from behind because that was very close. To being up there in the annals of what the hell runs in Michigan history.
I was expecting him to get caught from behind. I was hopeful for like a Devion Smith stiff arm to kind of complete
me.
That one.
Yeah.
But alas, it was fine. He did his job. He also, his pass blocking, remember that was a problem last year? And he like leveled a couple guys this time. Like that has gone from being a not the greatest pass blocker to this guy is like up there with the Lloyd Carr guys.
I don't know. I've seen him get whooped a couple of times this year. Like, I think he gave up a sack against
Well, Buster. I mean, Chris Perry would get whooped once in a while, too. Right. But he was a, in general, good pass blocker.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just felt like, oh, they ran. They got 4 yards. That doesn't feel great. Or they ran, they got 7 yards, they got 3 yards. That doesn't feel great. But then you go and you go back and you look at it, and you know, Michigan has what, a 90-yard drive in the third quarter, which was a major response drive after they were trailing for the first time all year. So you have all these drives that kind of peter out, and then you have the one real long drive, which is very difficult to do, and it doesn't feel like they got 450 yards against a pretty good defense. But they did.
They did. Some of the big things there, they had that TE leak, the tight end leak play that they ran 3 times for first downs.
Yeah, that must have been like a scouting report.
Yeah. Dummy.
There's a big one on defense that we'll talk about in the next section as well. but yeah, there's clearly just something that they saw in Nebraska's zone, because whenever you can run something 3 freaking times in the same game for
right.
critical conversions.
I thought what it was the outside linebacker was keying that tight end, the guy who's supposed to be covering him, and then if he doesn't go, then he backs out and tries to get underneath, and they add an extra guy to the coverage, and every single time he backed out, you know, Schoonmaker really sold it the first time, but then like they weren't even paying attention to all twice.
Yeah, and often what you'll see there is if there'll be linebackers who activate on there's a lingo for them.
Like
dog blitz.
Yeah, if they
see their coverage responsibility blocking, they'll convert to be a blitzer.
Right.
and so usually when you get those tight end leak plays, that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But this it was just like, man, these guys are getting deep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a pass to Honigford who actually made yards after the catch, and then like the second the ball went to him, I'm like, please catch this, and then like and then he's running with it, I'm like, oh god, it's Sonic Fur, there's no way he turns the corner, and he actually turned the corner and got like 2 yards and got the first down. It was on first down, so
yeah, it was not a third down,
it was in the third down, but still seeing Joel Honigford make a catch, like, you know, go get it, big guy.
Yeah, they did it like dink and dunk a little bit around just taking those 5 yards at 5 yard outs and just sort of methodically going down the field. That's what it felt like. It felt like a methodical performance.
Well, I thought this made sense against Nebraska because, I mean, we go back to the thing with Nebraska is they're very clever, but their fundamentals suck. And one thing that Michigan was doing was, like, dumping it off to Corum, and, like, you're used to that play getting 5 yards. And then Corum would just kind of dodge around guys and turn it into a first down. And some of it was just, like, bad angles for Nebraska, bad tackling, like, it was so consistent that Nebraska was going to screw something up a little bit. Not a huge screw up, but like not be very fundamental. And like you could make that into your game plan.
Yeah. And they clearly took the split zone stuff and they wanted to run some counters based on that. So they'd pull the tight end across the formation and then they'd insert him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty successful consistently. That was like, all right, Haskins is going to get 5 to 7 yards on this a lot because the gap that you're attacking is not the gap that you look like you're attacking and that they expect you to attack.
If you remember, that was the wham block that they brought out in like 2015, back in like the Harbaugh does something cool every week.
Well, I mean,
it was exactly that play. Like I remember them. Well, they did it with like a fullback one time,
right?
But
you chip the defensive lineman with, and then go downfield, and then the split block comes in and seals them out,
yeah. Right?
Something similar happened on the long Corum run right before halftime, where they managed, and that was less of a wham block because the tight end actually had to go downfield to find anyone to get.
Right.
But so it's nice to see them able to incorporate some counters to the thing that got stale, which is something that you expect coaching staffs to do. It's always a game of cat and mouse. And then the other thing that they did is they brought in JJ McCarthy and they ran an arc read, which worked once.
Right. I mean, it worked fantastic the one time, and even the announcers still thought Cade was in there, so they just kind of snuck him onto the field and ran it. Then they ran it again in the fourth quarter in the last drive, and that is the point where, and this is a point I made in UFR this week too, you've got to anticipate some of the counters to the obvious things you do.
Well, yeah, and so Michigan has developed a pattern over the last few years is like critical downs, critical third downs late in games. They're going to look at a QB run.
Yeah.
And they're going to expect it because you don't do it the rest of
the
game, that they're going to be like, oh, this isn't going to happen. But you remember like it was a few years ago, like Patterson, like pulling against Michigan State late for a big conversion.
Yes.
Like that became something that was like a go-to. And now I think that Michigan, when you come and play Michigan and it's the fourth quarter and you need to convert third and five, opponents are going to be dialing up QB run blitzes.
Yeah.
And we saw that against
We saw it against
Rutgers.
Wisconsin. We saw it against, Rutgers. Army did it last year to us.
Well, 2 years ago.
Sorry. The last year doesn't count. Right. it worked in 2018, but it's not really worked since then. But on those plays, like the tight ends, because those guys are coming in, the tight ends are releasing into nobody. And that is just like such a pop pass opportunity right there where you can just like dagger them. And I mean, Ohio State, you can't save like the dagger for like Ohio State, because Ohio State's going to look at that play and be like, okay, they're saving the counter for us. So like, they're going to be ready for it. But in this situation, when like everyone expects you to do something, you cannot do the thing everyone expects you to do.
Yeah. And the the alternatives are probably not super appealing either, because like the yardage is such that you're probably not going to get it if you just put it on the ground, and then your passing game, especially kind of the short stuff, intermediate between the hashes, doesn't feel great.
Yeah,
and it also feels like Cade threw a pretty bad interception on a similar third down. So maybe in that situation, you're looking for discretion to be the better part of valor, and you're just like, all right, this has a better chance of working than just running up the middle. But at this point, it probably doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, we don't do a lot of intermediate stuff. You know, Michigan's got like the dump off and the bomb are basically their
right. I tweeted in the Wisconsin game that Cade should never throw anything between 5 and 30 yards.
Well, they listen to you, Brian. They're hanging on your tweets and making game plans out of them, which I guess is,
they're so infrequent now. I don't know like what they're really going on.
The program now has very, very deep thoughts about Ann Arbor politics, by the way.
Well, that's probably for the best. And then we saw Dalen Baldwin kind of emerge as maybe not the number one receiver in the absence of Roman
Wilson.
He's
definitely number two to Johnson,
but he was frequently targeted and it had a couple of opportunities, I think, to make catches that were difficult but makeable that he didn't bring in. Sanderstall also had a similar one. This is probably one of McNamara's best plays of the day, where he gets pressure right up the middle. He's able to roll away from it and actually put it on Sanderstall and couldn't quite bring it in. That was tough.
I think I'm going to give that one a one when I'm doing it. It was definitely not a three. It's a very good play by the quarterback just to like make that into something when you get immediate pressure. I mean, the offensive line, I thought they were kind of in tough because they kept on losing guys. Like, they lost Zinter her way through the game. They're rotating Keegan Filianga, and I thought Keegan was just off. I don't know if he had a bad week of practice or something.
Well, I had Barnhart come in.
Well, Barnhart came in after both of those guys went down, so Filianga got hurt as well. And then I think they reinserted him, or he tried again and just couldn't do it because he came back out again right away. Like, not in a rotational kind of way. So I thought that he probably was playing hurt or something happened to him, and then Zinter went out earlier too. So they were down to Barnhart because they had to be. They were down to Barnhart and Keegan. And Barnhart, up and down. I mean, some of those late Haskins touchdowns, I think he made a play on both of those.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, the being down to Carson Barnhart is...
there's worse places
there are
to
much
be.
Worse places to be.
Very true, very true.
Like, that's a guy who's gotten a lot of hype within the program, has some playing time, mm-hmm. is a third-year player who should be, like, pretty good now. Like,
yeah.
And there wasn't really a drop-off when he came in, not, like, overall, like, because those guys had some errors, too. False starts were a big problem.
So they were a couple. So Keegan was responsible for his. A couple of them, I thought, and this is another general game thing, is that Frost really came in game-theoring this one. And, like, a lot of the college crap, CRAPPE.
Yeah.
And some of that was just kind of like pushing the boundaries of what you can get away with. And so they got called for one of them.
They got called for disconcerting signals.
But they were doing that. They did. So they did one on the first false start that Michigan got flagged for. And Michigan yelled at the refs afterwards for that one. And then they called the second one because like they were looking for it. And then they got away with it again in the fourth quarter. That was when Stuber got really mad. So like I think I counted two false starts that were just on Michigan and three that were like disconcerting signals, and one of them got flagged.
Yeah, and the Stardis was the culprit on the one where everybody except the Stardis moved. Whenever there's a false start where the ref says multiple players, it's really the center.
It's the center, yeah. It's hilarious that he's the one who always gets away with
right,
it.
Right, and then he's like, ah, why did you guys all move? Yeah. Oh, I'm the only one who knew the snap count.
Yep. I mean, that one could have been another disconcerting signals, though, because they all went because they heard a clap. And he was, I think they were going on second clap or first clap. Like, I think that was the system they were using for that noise, which, shout out to Nebraska fans. And for everyone who was there told me that that was, like, up there with Iowa 2016 or Wisconsin in some of the bigger games. Like, that's a very good, loud stadium full of very angry fans, loud fans, Inuit fans.
Involved. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I mean, they managed to get through it. And I do think that I've seen a lot of complaining about quarterback ceiling in the aftermath of this game.
I mean, if Cade's not going to be the man throwing it deep, that takes a big chunk of his ceiling off.
Right, and then you're bringing in if you're bringing in McCarthy, and it kind of feels like when Jabril Peppers was in the Wildcat right now.
Yeah,
where it's just like, hey, would you like to run a QB run blitz? Because here we go. What do you have in your package for arc read? Because that's what you should call right now.
And gosh, like just one little pop pass right there. I mean, how cool would it have been if they had some sort of thing off of that and just score a quick touchdown right there or get the first down? And I mean, it didn't kill me that they moved backwards because I think it's actually an easier field goal to get to kick it from the 20 for Moody than
I just don't think it matters for Moody. Yeah. He's just like, I have precisely calibrated how much draw I have.
Did you see what Barron said? That, like, he wanted to get a celebration touch from him, and he's like, he does not celebrate. Like, yeah, after he kicks his field goals, he just, like, walks off the field.
That he should have got that picture anyway. That's like, you know, I don't celebrate that. That was, what was a 38-yarder? That's...
I mean, you're a college guy who doesn't get excited about that.
No, like...
That's alligator blood.
I like I like it when kids who are kickers act like Wednesday Addams, because as soon as it can just go right. Yeah. So you're just like, I guess I'm not a college kicker today, but maybe tomorrow.
Yep.
Not today, college kicker Satan. Anyway, we've gotten off track, and we should probably stop and talk about the defense.
Sounds good.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. And now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
You and me, you and me, nobody baby but you and me.
Hey, 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 my.
Nobody baby but you and me.
If the stars don't shine, if the moon won't rise, if I never see the setting sun again, you won't hear me cry. This I testify. Please believe me, for you know I wouldn't lie. And as long as there is
you and me,
nobody
baby but you and me.
I sort of love and hate playing Nebraska because I love their offense and all the things they do. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Why are they doing it to us?
I mean, it's clever. It's very clever. I kind of feel like they want to be clever more than good sometimes.
Nah,
but
no.
It's clever.
I mean, given the talent level they have, the guys that they're stapling together, like how many Nebraska guys get drafted anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Their wide receivers don't get drafted. I mean, Amir Abdullah got drafted, but that guy ran for like 1,800 yards. So when they got a guy...
You don't need to remind me. I'm a Lions fan, and I'm also the guy who didn't draft him in draft again, if you recall.
No, Seth, you are literally the only person on earth who recalls anything about draft again. But you know, Michigan had, until this game, gotten through almost half a football season with basically no busts.
Uh-huh.
And Nebraska put that to the sword.
Well, I mean, Nebraska, right at the beginning, that the throwback screen.
Yeah, the first play throwback screen where it's just like, there's literally no Michigan people within 15 yards of this.
And that was on Dax Hill, and that's because they took their they put out their regular spread offense, so then Dax Hill's out there as the nickel. And then they moved everybody inside, so Dax Hill is now an outside linebacker. And I mean like a 1990s neck rolly outside linebacker. That's his role in that play. And so he's thinking, like, I got to get in there and make a, you know, like, that's the mindset you get into. And then they roll, they have the everything going one side, and he, like, starts rolling out that way because he's not sure where he's supposed to. And then the running back just leaks out. I mean, it was so perfect. I almost felt like clapping for Nebraska, except for I was mad because I'm a
Michigan
fan.
And then they hit the wheel on the second, like, the throwback wheel.
Yep.
Which was a similar concept. And the tight end touchdown where I think they got Junior Colson.
Yeah.
Which is like, well, that's probably going to happen.
I mean, it was
a freshman linebacker plays Nebraska.
It was also basically an option play. So it was like a third option play where he was the guy option. So, I mean, I get why he kind of got a little out of sorts there.
Right. And they just have these wrinkles where you don't know what you're looking at, and you take a step that's the wrong direction, and then they completely eat your face. But then I guess their problem is outside of that, they just didn't have a whole lot. And I guess that's in one sense, that's a kind of a stupid thing to say since they put up 29 points against a very good defense, but
22.
Sure. Sure.
There was one play that stuck out to me because it was just one of those really clever things they did where, like, the quarterback turns away from the play as if he's going to hand off, and the running back is running the opposite direction. And the linebackers are keying the quarterback turning that way to see, like, which side the run's going to come down. And so they're frozen, and then the run is like, and then Martinez turns around and bolts the other way. And it's like, now you've frozen the linebackers and you've gotten the edge on them. And then on the same play, in order to take advantage of those linebackers, they released the center and had him try to go down and block the middle linebacker. He gets behind him and he does an illegal chop block. So the play comes back. And that, like, there is Nebraska in a nutshell. Like, the fundamentals, like, the little easy things.
And the chop block's on Josh Ross. And Josh Ross, like, best case scenario is holding that down to, like, 8 yards.
Right.
And he gets chopped, so it's a bigger play. But it's just like, dude, you don't need to do that. Also, I think they might have changed the rule there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that was illegal last year. Because I've seen a lot of blocks like that.
Yeah.
Well,
you can't go from behind if it's an illegal to if you're.
So it's like you have to chop them when you're essentially facing, like, you have, like, from, I think, noon to like 2 o'clock.
Right.
So you have from 10 to 2.
Yeah.
And if you're there, you can do it. But Ross had turned to the sideline, and so the chop block came in on the side of Ross.
Right, which is a good rule because, I mean, that's an easy way to injure somebody
if they're not looking at you when you go for the legs. Rule.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think, like, defenders should be able to chop block OL. Like, the Newsom thing? Like,
yeah.
That should not be legal. but there were also, this wasn't just a one-sided blowout, and the thing that leapt out to me when I rewatched from a tactical perspective that Michigan did well is the 4th and 2 where Martinez gets strung out for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they motion a receiver in, and Mike Morris, as soon as that receiver motions in, Mike Morris just has eyes on him because he knows this guy is going to come crack him.
Uh-huh.
And then the guy replacing is not a cornerback.
Right.
The guy replacing is Brad Hawkins.
Right.
So Michigan, I think, anticipated that exact play, getting Martinez to the edge, and their end to that side,
mm-hmm,
was aware he was going to get chop blocked, and the guy replacing was probably the best tackler Michigan has in their secondary.
Right.
So this was not completely one-sided, and obviously, I mean, they get through an entire half without giving up any points to this team. So, you know, it's we praise all the things that Nebraska does because they're extremely notable.
Yeah.
Their design is notable, but Michigan also got theirs.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, how do you grade when like the defensive linemen get like moved by a double, but the linebacker is able to stay clean and get around it and make the tackle?
It's always based on how much they get moved.
Right.
So if you're sticking at the line of scrimmage, that's going to be a plus one. If you give a yard or two, that's probably a plus 0.5, and then any more than that, and you're probably
okay,
either neutral or getting negatives.
Yeah, because I've been doing negative if the linebacker gets affected by it, and it's like,
yeah,
there were a lot of these, though, where like Mazi Smith would get blocked down like 2 yards, which I would consider a negative normally. But he was doing it in such a way that Josh Ross could kind of hang out back there and hide and then get around. Like, he was making sure this linebacker stayed clean first.
I mean, there are doubles and then there are doubles, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if we're talking about, like, someone chips you and then releases.
No, these are extended doubles.
But if you get an extended double and you're able to sit down on it and, like, 2 yards downfield, that's – I'm not going to negative that. And there's a fair chance that you're going to get at least half a point.
Yeah.
Because those are – spending two guys for one, and the result of the play is that there's a linebacker charging in and you pick up like 3 yards. Like, 3 yards is not a win, right?
So, right. So, I mean, well, my sense is when I go back to review this is that there's going to be a lot of plus fives, and to the point where, like, oh my God.
0.5, because plus five is,
yeah,
not.
Yeah, 0.5. Yeah.
Halves.
But plus five
half
is
points.
I might be a plus one plus five in this game, I'm thinking of in particular. But, the 0.5s, I'm thinking about giving them out, and I was like, oh my God, I might have a huge line score, because that was happening a lot, where Mazi Smith and Hinton would take on a play-long double, but keep the linebacker clean to extremes. Like, I'm going to give as much space as I have to, as long as the guy who wants to get to Ross cannot get to Ross. And Ross would just sneak around and stick, and it would be like a 2 or 1 yard play afterwards.
Well, the thing you should be looking for is if there's any defensive holding going on.
Uh-huh.
Because if there's defensive holding, then yeah, that's the goal.
I mean, they were doing it without defensive holding. They were doing it by giving up yards. They were getting
or
3 yards.
If Mazi Smith has his mitts on an offensive lineman and isn't letting go and isn't trying to shed, that's, they have a totally different goal than we're used to seeing as the Michigan line.
And that my sense is that they're doing something like that.
Well, and so when we've seen a lot of the four-man front this year, because we're going up against a lot of spread offenses, and I think you're going to see a lot more five linemen. And in those situations, that's more common, because you're going to want guys to two-gap more.
Right.
Anyway. So, individual defensive standout plays came from Hawkins. Not only the fourth down stop, but also the fumble, which Nebraska naturally bitched about. And that was not close at all.
I was wondering.
He was literally making forward progress when the ball came out.
Well, I know, but the level for Nebraska fans to bitch about refereeing and things that went against them is actually higher than Penn State. It's just no one pays attention to Nebraska fans.
So, what? Like, no.
Yes.
No. Wait, you're no, okay.
Nebraska fans have no tolerance whatsoever.
You are confusing Nebraska fans with Scott Frost.
Okay.
Nebraska fans are mostly fine. Fair enough.
No, I concede. You're right. Nebraska, I was assuming, and I probably not a correct assumption, that Nebraska fans and Scott Frost are the same people.
And then, of course, Dax Hill has the crazy interception.
Oh, it's an amazing play.
I think everybody thinks it's a much more amazing play than I did, because it's like he's on the ground. And the ball's like falling to him, and he catches it. And I'm like, the pass breakup is the thing.
Is a great play.
Yeah,
that was a fantastic.
The interception is just like kind of a fluke, but like when that ball gets in the air, you're like, oh, that's a completion.
And then, exactly.
So yeah, the interception is almost incidental to why that was a great play.
I wouldn't call it incidental. I don't think it's easy when a ball is like flopping around in the air to catch it, especially with Moten jumping on you and trying to quote help. Like, you're not being helpful, RJ.
Did he actually say that? It was like, I was trying to help?
No.
Okay,
no,
you can't do that then.
Okay. No, I mean, it looked like he was trying to be helpful. I was assuming. All right. But, and then some of the Green, like, all of a sudden turned invisible in the middle of his interception opportunity. Like, that was, this is happening to him so often, so I'm starting to get a little nervous.
That was a tough diving catch that I'm not surprised the defensive back didn't make, right?
Uh-huh.
It just happens to bounce to Oliver Martin. And that's like, I was more concerned with the fact that Michigan took like a couple of real bad pass interference penalties in this game. Like,
well, there's one where the guy like interfered back, and I still felt it was like correct to call the pass interference on
like
Turner.
Last year, Michigan State bad. Like,
yes.
Gray had one where you're just like, oh god.
Uh huh.
And then Turner had one which was similar. Just like, what are we doing here?
Turner was the one where like people online were mad because you know he got DPI or he got OPI'd at the end of it, right? Like they grabbed on it. I'm like, what? Well, did you see what he did first?
Yeah.
Like, come on! Like,
so this
justice is
this
not served.
I think is a concern because Nebraska came in and you don't really rate Nebraska's offensive skill position players,
right?
But like Betts was he's a freshman, but he was just outside the top 100. The Toure guy that they got from Montana, that guy's scorching secondaries all over the place. So I think this is really the first time they had gone up against a functional passing game, and there were some warning signs, I would say, that the cornerbacks might be kind of a problem against teams down the road.
So I mean the fourth and sixth conversion, which was a pick play. I mean, they could have called OPI on that. But also, I do not want our guys bumping into each other and getting lost like that. And I thought that was on... Dax is the one who's supposed to be covering the guy who got out there. And Green was the one who kind of collided with him. And then there's got to be a second option. Like, if you're coming in like that, they've got to have more practice on what to do in those situations, even if you do get picked, because they don't call those very often.
Yeah, and there was a bunch formation in the first half where they both went with... Oh, this is the same play.
Same play.
Okay,
yeah.
I was envisioning something
really
that was
both,
like mesh.
They didn't really both go
that,
with
that was
the
a
outside
bust.
Receiver like, cracked down on
no,
the...
No, that was a bust. So they were supposed... one of them thought that they were going to switch,
yeah,
which I was about to call banjo.
Uh-huh.
Which is what they call it, but so they were going
to
switch.
So that was my point. That Green needs to switch on that because there's no way for Dax to make to get underneath the guy coming inside.
I mean,
it's like
just
that.
Yeah, historically, like the way this works is that the outside back just defensive back takes whoever releases outside,
right?
And to not do that, it's kind of like.
Yeah.
That's not even like this is a transition cost for a defense. It's just like, what are we doing here?
I mean, well, we were a man defense before, so it's not like this is a new concept.
No, I mean, the bunch stuff is pretty similar because it turns into sort of a hybrid of man and zone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pattern matching because that's all you can do against a bunch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I have some trepidation in me about how this is going to go.
I think Turner is what he is. I think that Gray has impressed me this year. I mean, for what you're expecting to get out of Gray.
I'm still reserving. Like,
well, yeah, you have to. But, I mean, he's been – there were plays, too, where he was just fine, even in this game. Like, he was staying with the guy, and there was nothing available.
So, like, the grade that we're giving out here is kind of a harsh curve because we're talking about a pretty – decent like 6 or 7 year run of all NFL cornerbacks,
right?
Except for like one guy who was all conference didn't make the NFL. So these guys I think are going to be a significant way away from that, and I don't know what standard we're talking about when we judge them at this point.
I mean,
like Michigan 6-0 and a top 10 team, and this is a problem.
Yeah, well, but, I mean, would you put him with Brandon Watson? I mean, because that's kind of where I have Gray. Like, he is a very effective cornerback, and I do not want him against Olave.
I don't think I would even put him in that category yet, just because Brandon Watson had proved it against a lot of teams that could throw the ball.
Yeah.
And then he just got outclassed athletically against five stars. I don't know if we've seen a team that's any good at throwing the ball try to go after Gray.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really just like, I would not be surprised if Michigan gets in a situation where their cornerbacks are like, oh, right, we've managed to hide this all year,
mm-hmm.
and they can't hide it right now.
Fair
I mean,
enough, yeah.
I'm not saying that that's a certainty, but that is definitely a possibility I'm keeping open in my head. So But on the other hand, this was another game from the defensive tackles where not only did they not get blown off the field, but they were integral in a lot of third and short stops. So Hinton came off and annihilated a guy.
Yes.
Like Mozzie Smith was like, he had to run like 50 yards on the first play of the game. And I'm like, well, that's it for Mozzie.
Indeed.
Total of 10 snaps in this game, but he was there. And as you mentioned, they were doubling them consistently and they were able to stick at the line of scrimmage for the most part or close to it. And we just went back to back against Wisconsin and Nebraska. And I think at this point we have to say that they're legit.
Yeah. Like Jenkins too. I mean, there was a third and one where, like, you know, we're used to like, okay, third and one, they're going to give it up. And he made the play.
Yeah. Spate was the nose tackle. And it looked like it was like, they were just like, whatever.
Uh-huh.
You know, or did they just rotate so much? And I saw the personnel in there. I'm like, I am deeply uncomfortable with this personnel here on this critical down.
Uh-huh.
That was right before the fourth and two.
Yes.
And those guys got a stuff. So as far as like exceeding expectations on this team, the defensive tackles are miles above anybody else.
Yes. And like, I mean, what does that change the ceiling on this team? Is that really like the big... that's a huge difference, even more so than the linebackers.
I don't know, because like the level that they're performing at is like, all right, these are good Big Ten defensive tackles. But one thing we saw when Michigan was trying to rush Martinez is that there were real big gaps when Hutchinson would go around and flush Martinez up into the pocket. The defensive tackles had not pushed that close.
Yeah.
So like they are not really offering anything at all in pass rush. So I would not say that this looks like a defense that's going to be able to hang with Ohio State, right?
I'm not at the Ohio State level yet. I am more like Penn State, Michigan State. Can we dominate those offensive lines? Because that would change the math incredibly with those two guys.
Given what Alex saw when he scouted the Michigan State Nebraska game, like you got to think that Michigan's defensive line can probably do what Nebraska's did, because Nebraska's defensive line, they made some plays in this game, but they also got moved. And you can't really say the inverse.
I mean, my take on Michigan State this year is I'm just completely reserving judgment, because I just like they just keep having their wins, and I don't even want to...
We're keeping all the disrespect in the barn right
yes,
now.
Yes, absolutely.
All the disrespect is going towards the basketball team, which was picked sixth. I don't remember what that's like. Who? Man. Sixth place, come on.
Yeah, well, next week, we have the bye coming up, so next week we get to talk basketball.
All right. Any other defensive nublets?
No, I think we got it covered. Oh, well, yeah, the upfield stuff. Ojabo was, as you predicted, getting a little too out of his lane there.
Yeah.
There was a play, though, where he completely Hutchinsoned a power play, where he just, like, dug underneath the puller, and that's good to see him coming along. He's still absolutely coming along.
Yeah. As you would expect a Scottish person who got stuck in Scotland last year.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a break, talk some game theory, special teams bits.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. One in three online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Persia is moving up in the world. And along with it has come a new freedom of expression.
Tehran is a modern city,
visibly leaning more west than east.
The miniskirt is here. And along with it has come a new freedom of expression.
Takes so hot that they could make Scott Frost's face even redder! And I need them from Jason and Randy Sklar and you, Seth! Can you give them to me?
Yes! Jason, go!
Why does I know I get to do that? I tell Brian, people who goes.
Brian, who goes?
Randy, you have to go first!
All right. Scott Frost needs to lobby the Big Ten in order to add an extra column in statistics for moral victory. It would make Nebraska 3-4-0-3.
I don't know if that's a hot take. That would give him massive job security. They'd be like, "Look, we every year we win this category."
Isn't that what we want as Michigan fans?
Scott Frost, Emma. If we did that, the Lions would like never be able to draft high again.
I don't want to make fun of Scott Frost, so because like I kind of feel like he's dangerously close to putting it together, and then there will be like one year where they just don't shoot themselves, and they'll be like really good. It could happen,
maybe. But look, Scott Frost is great at lobbying for things. I mean, if you don't believe us, go back to 1997. You know,
Jason, give me your hottest take.
I think Michigan should start Domani Jackson and Will Johnson in the bowl game.
Okay, for one, that was not like a wrestler Randy Savage voice. It kind of sounded like a Baba Yaga or something.
I don't know.
We'll work on it. We'll work on it.
All right, gotta get hotter, Jay. You gotta get hotter.
They're coming out of high school early. I'm just going to assume we're going to flip to Monty Jackson. Maybe that's too much. But And we can just say, hey, Jamon Green, we flipped you the opportunity. It just went through your hands.
Oh.
And it went.
Oh, no, come on.
Look, I love the guy. He made a great tackle at the end of the game, and he's come a long way. But I don't know if there is a cornerback in college football who has had his hands on more interceptions and has won in the year. Am I wrong? Am I wrong to say
well,
that?
Yeah, maybe. Brad Hawkins.
Brad Hawkins.
Oh, Brad Hawkins. His whole thing.
All right.
He's going to
get guys, one. You guys got to, like, we won a game it's on the true. Road against a solid team. Let's come with some more, like, positive takes. Can we do that?
Yeah, okay. mine was positive.
Yeah, yours is positive.
You're asking them to have more hot takes like these?
No, I'm just like, read the room, Jason.
Jeez, all right, I'm trying. I'm all doing right. my best.
Sorry. I went pretty hard on you on that segment.
That's now that you're a soccer coach, you're like,
oh yeah,
like,
you gotta like
hard ass.
Pay attention to the ball. Just look at the ball. Just look at it once.
Yeah, you went herd ball on it. Okay, sorry, so go yeah, ahead.
Seth, give me your hottest take.
Seth, go.
Dax Hill knew what he was doing because...
Wait, what?
With his final... with his taunting penalty at the end.
Oh, the taunting penalty.
The taunting penalty at the end because all game, the Nebraska fans were like booing the rules because they don't know the rules of football. And
That's
then
right.
he gets them. Because like the second they announce it, like penalty 15 yards, and the whole stadium like, goes yay! And then they're like Michigan ball, oh, it was perfect. Well, Dax Hill knew what he was doing.
He fooled me even because for a second I was like, wait, is this like the David Ojabo penalty in from game one?
No, that was
Western?
On third down. That was on third
that
down.
Was on third down, yeah. not fourth down. Yep. I didn't realize that, so I too was fooled.
It's just great that the football rules are such that you can't taunt at all unless you've just won the game. And then right. you can taunt all you want.
That's right.
It's like encouraged.
And look, bring all of Nebraska fans.
People
with
throw
you.
Little celebratory flags all around for you to like enjoy.
What about like what about a shared taunting penalty? Like you were like shared possession, like two teams taunting together, and then I guess the penalty goes to the team with possession of the taunt.
That was my backup hot take.
Didn't Mark Richt instruct his entire team to like go celebrate in the end zone after a touchdown against Florida a few years ago, and they told everybody on Georgia that they had a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, and if they got another one, they were ejected.
That's yeah. right.
So. I don't think that's ever going to be topped. I don't know how you can.
That's a pretty good one. Right. That's pretty top. Good one. That's
all right, top. Here's mine.
Yes.
Cade McNamara and J.J. McCarthy should have the same number.
Is that legal? Are you allowed to do that?
I mean, no. They just can't be on the field at the same time.
Right.
So why not just make them both 9?
Yeah. Because J.J. McNamara.
Just like... It seems like it should definitely be illegal.
No,
I agree with you.
I definitely thought the same thing during the game when they did not realize it was J.J. McCarthy running the ball. And, yeah, I mean, no, it makes sense. Oh, yeah.
But, like, so, you, sure. like, previously, you can't have two guys with the same number on the field at the same time, which is not a problem at quarterback, except, you know, when
no.
they were doing those weird two quarterback things. But we don't have to do that. We can
right.
just have two quarterbacks with the same number. It's definitely unsporting, but we should have done it against Scott Frost.
Yes.
Yes, we should have. But doesn't it to me feel like, you guys tell me if I'm wrong, it feels like J.J. McCarthy is your high school girlfriend and you've brought the relationship
no,
to college.
No, you mean Cade
sorry.
Mac.
Sorry, Cade McNamara is your high school girlfriend. You've brought the relationship to college. She's cool, and like you get a lot out of this relationship, and you're like, she's great, but she's not quite as exciting as the new woman you met in your Econ 101 class. And you're like, I don't know what to do right now. She's good, but this new one is really good, and I don't know how we're going to do that. We're going to have to break up with him.
So. Well, so like, but you're not in the position where you're dating either of these people. You're just watching right. someone else date the people.
Correct. Correct.
And so you're like, right. I don't know what he should do. Except I definitely do because I'm a fan and I have yeah. very strong opinions that the 5-star freshman is the person.
Right. Precisely. I mean, you see like some overthrows and some overreaches and you're like, yeah, maybe it's time to move on. Yeah. I'm just a friend. Just giving you advice.
Right. That's yeah. All. You're just the guy who's like, no, she's totally hot.
Yeah. yeah. And she likes you. She's
yeah.
Really
she's totally into you. And she's not at all a little right. unbalanced Or crazy and might throw 7 interceptions in a game. That's definitely not going to happen.
And you know what? You were with the girl. I understood she was true. She didn't throw any interceptions. She didn't take any sacks. But like
steady.
You know, supportive. if she's gonna miss some people downfield, then maybe you can rethink this.
Think about.
I think our metaphors are becoming extremely mixed in a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna tell you that if you would like more Sklar's, you should subscribe to their podcast, View from the Cheap Seats. Hit up their Patreon. Or come out to their shows the weekend of the Northwestern game, the 22nd and 23rd. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Right. And I will say that on our podcast this week, we have Katie Nolan from Garbage Time. She's fantastic.
Yes.
It was a great episode, by the way. I listened to it on the way here, guys. Like, that was good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a good one.
She just left ESPN. And so, you know, interesting to talk about that and the Sage Steele controversy, all that stuff we get into with her.
Our opening take is like a 10-minute blast on Urban Meyer. So if you want to feel good about something.
Sells it better than that.
That is a major upset that we got this far into the podcast without anyone mentioning Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
Got it.
Good Lord.
The great thing is that you knew he was going to lie about it afterwards. Like
I just don't like why in public you have so much money. You could buy like
Brian.
He's losing.
Brian. Have you ever been to a restaurant and the music at the bar is so loud next door that people start coming over to you and they're like, I'm a huge M Globe blog fan. Will you please come over and take pictures? And you're like, but I'm supposed to be here with my family. And they're like, we won't stand for that. You need to come over here. And then he starts taking pictures. And then people beg him to come out on the dance floor. And they're pulling him, even though you can't see anybody pulling him.
And you're sticking your fingers in their butt.
Yeah.
This is so plausible.
Wait. The part before or the last part? No, don't answer that. I don't want to know.
I thought,
is he applying for a job at Wichita State?
I thought he was going to get the USC job.
It happened. And not surprised, right? The guy is a loser for the first time in his life, and he wants to go back to Columbus.
He wants to go back to Columbus.
And where everyone loves him, and he had his,
yeah.
and get his ego and other things stroked. And then, like, he wants to feel loved again. I understand that. And then I was just like counting down until he completely lied about it and got caught.
Totally.
And like,
yeah,
it boom, just happened. And like, people didn't know what direction they should we like check in with Shelley Meyer. Don't check in with Shelley Meyer. She's a terrible person too. just wait for him to lie. And then for like the next picture to come out and it'll be out there.
I can't wait for him to have a Barstool Sports podcast with Zach Smith.
Yes.
I mean, he's got the bar called 7-0. Isn't that the bar that he has?
I don't know what it's called.
He might want to – I think that's how many times or whatever, 5-0, how many times he beat Michigan. I mean, he should maybe have another bar called 2-1. There you go. That's my other hobby.
All right. This segment has run its course. And then kept going. We'll talk to you guys next week. I don't really know if I have a thing that stands out as a decision that was unusual. Everybody's getting very aggressive on fourth down.
Uh-huh.
And so we could keep talking about how this was very aggressive on fourth down, and that is correct.
But we didn't go for it. We kicked a fourth and one, what was it, on our 40? Like, and then they punted it back to us on fourth and one. Like, both of those, I was like... When we did it, I wanted us to go. And when Nebraska punted, I was like, thank you.
We punted from the plus 40?
From our own 40.
Our own 40, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but then they punted it right back to us on fourth and one. And when they punted it, I was like, thank you. Thank you for punting.
Okay. There's like a difference between your 40 and the plus 40, right?
I thought I made that clear, though.
Yeah. I think you could definitely make a case that you should have gone on fourth and one there, but it's not like one of those just like I can't believe we're punting situations.
Yeah. No, there were none of those.
The David Shaw.
What did you think of not taking a timeout at the end of the first half when they had like 2:20 left and we let them run 40 seconds off the clock and we got the ball back with 1:40?
That's kind of in the middle there because that's a situation where, all right, you come out there, there's 2:20 on the clock. Do you want to pass the ball? Do you want to be in second and 10? Do you want to give them the last possession of the half? And when that's at 1:40, you're compromising your ability to get to the end zone somewhat, but you're also reducing the amount of time that they would have to mount some sort of response drive. Mm-hmm. You know, there are situations where I'm like, take your timeout. So that one was kind of like, I can see an argument for both sides.
Yeah, if I was playing Madden, I would take a timeout there. I was, in my sense.
Okay, but everybody not, playing Madden is okay. hyper-aggressive yeah, on yeah. everything all okay. the time. All
right, but like, I was trying to set the standard there. But I was, because this team normally takes so long to get down the field on their two-minute drills, it annoyed me at the time.
They don't tell Cornelius Johnson that.
And then they had a great two-minute drill. Now, they got helped by a really bad call, like, for
oh,
us.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Which I thought Cade, because I remember Michigan State used to do this all the time against their opponents when I was doing faux film on them, where, like, if you see the guy is hindered a little bit, you just throw it up as if it was a fade, and, like, sometimes you will get that flag. So I thought Cade might have, like, I got nothing else to do. I'm just going to, like, try to get a flag. But, oh, my God. That's, like, the guy's doing nothing but, like, standing in his
He's
spot.
He's standing there, and Corum's like, bonk.
No, it was Henning. It was like, Henning.
Oh, was it Henning? Like, but many times I have ranted about how you have a right to your momentum.
Yeah.
Surely you have a right to stand still on a football field and do nothing. That can't be a penalty.
I mean, well, I've seen it called before. It's not the first time I've seen that, like, that particular piece of college BS come through for the offense. It is still absolutely BS, and they have quite a gripe on that one, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the other gripe I have about that is that I want Henning to, like, try a little harder to... I mean, that's JoJo Doma, and that guy is 240 pounds, and
yeah,
you're
run
AJ
around
Henning.
Him.
Like,
yeah.
Do something.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Special teams kind of had a meltdown from AJ Henning in this one, ran backwards on punt return and then muffed the second one.
Uh-huh. And well, he
shades
also
of why Caden Colasar was in there. Let some punts bounce. It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Well, he let the one bounce. Unfortunately, Nebraska is so bad fundamentally that it bounced into the end zone.
Right. Cause he let that bounce at the 10 and I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I don't think you can blame that on their fundamentals. It is a bouncing football. It can go many places.
There were five guys chasing it, and they were all looking at each other, and no one was actually...
That's not true. Like, there was a pylon can shot of, like, people desperately reaching for the ball.
That was after it went past
and the color guy, and the color guy's like, I don't know if they're really trying, and I'm like, look at the pylon can!
Oh, God, I would agree with the color guy at that point. They were trying after it went by them, but they all kind of, like, watched
no,
it, like, Keystone
no,
Cops.
They,
like,
no, it's like,
look
no,
at that ball
no,
go by
no.
Is that your responsibility or mine?
No, that's crazy.
All right. I'll back off on my fundamentals talk, but it was still, I feel like on the other team, or usually, that is going to be a ball on the 1 yard line. And that's why you have to catch that.
Well, in any case, so the special teams super victory didn't really work out because their punter did well, and Henning didn't have. His best day. On the other hand, Brad Robbins did also. There's another like absolute left turn on a. I was just like, how is he doing that?
I wasn't. That was even the one that was making me just like breathe just now. Like the one that he completely flipped the field. I think from the 20 to the 20, and it was in the air the whole time.
And
it
was a fair caught.
It was a fair catch, and I'm like, wow. Like, because normally he just pops them way, way, way up in the air, and you're like, okay, and then we're all going to sit around and wait for it to come down. And this one, he added distance to it, too. So, like, that is...
And then Moody is just like, yeah, put me on the left hash. It doesn't... I'm just going to have my gentle little draw into the net. And, like, the first time this year when it was happening, I was like, oh, no! And now it's just like, shoop.
That guy has Rockman blood, too. Like, he is so cold when he goes out there. I love it.
Abdur Rahman.
Well, I was about to say, I was saying rock, and then I had... In case it was not clear to the football people who are listening to this podcast, that we
everybody who listens to this podcast knows who Mar is.
Yeah.
But other than that, there weren't a whole lot of notable occurrences. Like you do expect guys to make 38-yard field goals, maybe not four of them. You know, I think you could argue that Michigan should have gone for it after they got down to the three or whatever on fourth down.
I thought that the play where Cade put his knee down.
Yeah.
That happened because Nebraska is going for, is trying to stop a sneak. And they're just blasting at the center and trying to get underneath the center. And that's why Vastardis gets pushed back, and that's why his knee goes down. So, I mean, they're fine at a sneak, and I think you're going to win those, especially with you have extra downs after that. Like, just third and one, tell them we're going to sneak it, and then see what happens. Just, like, get up there and be like, we're sneaking over your asses, and then I don't know.
Like, I don't know. Seems like they had a play call that was score an easy touchdown, and they had a unfortunate thing happen, but
I know. But
how often do you see that happen? Almost never.
Yeah. That's true.
And then, you and your statistics.
No, it's just my stupid fan brain remembers seeing it before, and it happened in the same exact situation where, like, the defense, if they are jumping at your center, if you do a normal snap, you have to go under center in that situation and be prepared for that because they're going to blast your center because that's what they're expecting to see.
All right.
Anyway, I mean the second down play call wasn't that. I mean that was fine, right? Like it was just when he stretched out and didn't make it, but he was like on the.
Yeah, I mean it got you down to the whisper of the goal line. It's not like that. Bad thing here is like there are all these reviews, and I'm like, oh well, that's not going our way.
Yeah, I know.
I was like. Damn review, making things correct that were incorrect.
Well, except for like the one review. First of all, awful spot when Haskins got the first down
by
2 yards.
I mean, you know it's an awful spot when it actually gets overturned.
Yeah.
That never happens.
By 2 yards. By like it actually made it to the 46. I'm like, yeah, you guys put it on like the 50. So it was a... But also, when they're reviewing it the whole time, and they took forever to review it. Like, they go to a commercial break, and they come back.
Yeah, and they had just started the review.
They had a sandwich first, but now he's got his sandwich, and he can have his review. But also, like, the whole time we're watching that review, we all get to watch Hayes getting away with some monster holding, and it's like...
Yeah. Nothing's holding anymore. You can't say anything's holding.
I just want to say I would not have been that mad if they decided to
go. No.
Just because, like...
No, we can't. That's not...
There was, like, a lot of gamesmanship. I don't know if we wanted to talk about that at all. Like, the Nebraska clapping, we discussed that. The changing, the Nebraska, like, was waiting until 10 seconds and then changing their guys. And, like... The defense is supposed to have time to change
right.
when you do that.
And so they would come in and the guys would get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And the defense is used to the cadence where it's like, all right, they're going to hold the snap so I can get set. And that was their final touchdown where Michigan had a bust because they had no one for Martinez.
Because they – and in that case – yeah, they weren't set. And the refs are supposed to hold, but the refs, I think, didn't want to, like, in the middle of Nebraska, right, with all these fans laying down on you, like, take the ball away and give them a delay of game, because that was going to happen.
Yeah, it was what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So I think they need to do something about that. Like, just give them the delay of game if you're going to substitute that late. Because like, there's probably a point on the play clock where if you're still substituting, it's just like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, I thought Michigan could have jogged on the field instead of trying to run to place to maybe make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I mean, Scott Frost, he did that on the three plays before that, too. So that was part of Frost gaming, was he was like, how far can I push this to get the defense unset and try to get around this rule that is in place
now, I'm just thinking about Joe Tiller now, and he'd have, like, 15 guys in the huddle and run four of them off.
I mean, that's Scott Frost. But and if his teams were sound fundamentally, I would be like, that's awesome. The problem I have with Scott Frost is that he has all these little tricks. He tries to outsmart the game. And then his guys, like, make dumb mistakes. Like, can we talk about the touchdown yet? We have not talked about their first touchdown. Where, like, they have four guys on the line of scrimmage, five guys on the line of scrimmage.
That's not on Scott Frost that he doesn't understand what an illegal formation is.
No. Scott Frost understands what illegal formation is. I think he tried to get he got away with one.
I don't think that was intentional.
Okay.
I don't think
Nebraska. You think one of the receivers was supposed to be down and then like.
Yeah, that was definitely like they ran that formation later in the. Like they covered up a slot. That's what they do that a lot.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was intentionally trying to get one over by hoping the refs don't call an illegal formation penalty, because that seems like a
But they didn't bet. Call the illegal formation penalty. And
yeah, but that's not on Scott Frost.
No, I just wanted to talk about that play because, like, that's the only reason there was a touchdown is because the way Michigan's going to line up, because we are, you know, the way our defense works, and every defense works, is you count eligible receivers from the outside. So if the slot's on the line, they'll pass over that guy and we'll have enough. Nobody has any protection. No one has any coverages that account for five receivers on the same side at the snap. Nobody has that. And that's why the only reason that touchdown happened. How do you call that a bust? There's literally nobody supposed to be on that. No, who has a five-man protection on one side of the field?
Well, yeah, but that's still not on Scott Frost.
I'm not putting it on Scott Frost. Right. That was a ref blow. Fine. But, like, I don't know. There was just a whole lot of that stuff. And then I also wanted to talk about the broadcasters and their burritos.
All right, the burritos thing was too long. Whatever.
No.
That's
so
definitely a signal that we're going to stop now and talk to Jamie.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com. During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Months cleaning the earth to stay sober. Got me going so berserk. They been stressing me at work, and my girlfriend wants to earn. Stress relaxation on some oxymoron. Get alone and put channel 4 on. Who do I see? My baby, dressed tight, looking right. So I fantasize as she proceeds to banter and tantalize. Keeps a low pro, just does a job and goes home. Poor man's hammering home. These creepy peeping tall motherfuckers. niggas don't know her from a hole in the wall. She bring players back down to earth like slam ball. Remember that? I choose to thank her, she hold it down. That's why they call her news anchor. They tell me, you've gotta let it go, gotta let it go, gotta let it go. No.
We welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm recovering from a magical day of college football, one of the reasons why we love the sport. But I'm also recovering from the surreal experience of watching the team that I'm cheering for going against Nebraska. You know, Michigan hadn't played Nebraska since early 2018. We've chronicled week in and week out all the mistakes the Huskers have made almost in every game since then. To watch it actually play out to a benefit was actually was quite fun. But yet surreal at the same time. It was like, oh yeah, this is how teams beat Nebraska.
So kind of a dud week in the league here. Yeah. Only five games, a couple of which are not really worth talking about. And then the game of the century of the week, number 4 Penn State versus number 3 Iowa. Do you realize we are one Georgia screw up away from number 1 Iowa?
I would say put Iowa number 1 anyway.
Cash all your stock in.
I can the make apocalypse. A case against every SEC team right now.
Oh my god. Anyway, so this game
their schedule is pretty light, so we remain one Georgia fuck up away, I think. From a number one Iowa team, at least for the foreseeable future.
This game looked like it was going one direction when Sean Clifford was in, and then he gets knocked out for the game. Not Trey Roberson.
but a similar player
comes in, completes 7 of 20 passes for 34 yards and 2 interceptions, and Penn State just can't. Like, they've got 17 points when Clifford goes out. I don't know how they got any in the second half.
Clifford was not great, though.
He was not great, but they were up 17-3. He'd already thrown 2 picks. But, like, you know, Iowa barely gets over 300 yards for this game. Like, they weren't going to win this game without having it handed to them by a quarterback injury. And when this happened, the announcers were really on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is Will Levis doing?
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah.
He's starting for Mississippi State, I think.
Somewhere.
No, Will Levis is starting for undefeated Kentucky.
Oh, that's right.
Georgia, by the way, next weekend. And he's throwing the ball to former Nebraska star Wandell Robinson.
That's right. So the thing is like, it's really hard to have a backup quarterback situation anymore.
Yeah.
Like, Kenny Guyton? I mean,
Ohio State is fine.
Everybody other than Ohio State.
They're importing him from high school now to be fine, though. Like, they got Quinn Ewers, I think, is the number 2 on their depth chart, if they actually have to go long. And, like, that guy was supposed to be in high school this year.
Yeah. So, just depressing, honestly. This game was depressing as soon as Clifford was out, because you just knew that Penn State was doing nothing for the rest of the game, and it was just like whether Iowa could like turtle its way to more points.
Penn State goes to Kinnick at night. I mean, it wasn't a night game.
This wasn't a Kinnick night game.
It
wasn't.
It got Kinnick nighty at the end there.
No,
it was dark at Kinnick.
It felt like a night game there in the second half.
Yes,
it didn't. It wasn't because it wasn't like the things that happened weren't like spooky punt.
And John O'Neill was refereeing. Like, everyone in the Big Ten was having flashbacks.
It was very clearly this one injury is the reason that this wasn't a 2-touchdown Penn State win. Must be extraordinarily frustrating as a Penn State fan to just walk in and be like, we're going to win this game. And then it's like, nope. And the reason we didn't win this game is not even something you can yell about the coaches about. It's just like,
yeah,
our quarterback got hurt and it's 2021, so his backup is a potato we found in a field.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's impossible to look at this game without the context of that injury. I mean, I actually thought Clifford had played pretty well before the injury. They had 193 total yards, 146 of them were through the air, and they decided right from the get-go, we're not going to try to run the football because we can't. We haven't been able to all year with our tailbacks. We're not going to be able to against Iowa. So they came out throwing with Clifford. Sometimes they were, you know, just your hitch passes or wide receiver screens, but they went downfield a few times. They also had some pretty plays to Brenton Strange, the tight end, but they passed the ball on 13 first downs versus 4 first down runs with Clifford. and they were averaging over 6 yards a play on first down overall. Things totally changed when Roberson had to go in the game. I mean, it was actually the exact reverse. It was 13 runs on first down versus 14 passes, and three of those passes happened real late in the game, desperation time. Once they fell behind, they were getting less than 3 yards a play on first down with Roberson in the game, and they just, you know, they couldn't, even the simple wide receiver type passes, they just couldn't do with Roberson. And it was just a matter of, was Iowa going to wake up their offense in time to get things done?
I want to give some credit where it's due, because they brought out LeVar Arrington for this play, for this game, and all of a sudden Ellis Burks and Jesse Lakita like turned into LeVar Arrington. Like, both of those guys had fantastic games, and going into this game, I was certain Iowa had the best three linebackers in the game, and I mean, those guys I thought really popped, to the point where, like, I'm more nervous about playing Penn State. Consider, you know, if they get their quarterback back, obviously.
Yeah.
But I'm more nervous about playing them now, because that linebacker play is looks very difficult to go against.
Yeah, well, Brooks is having, you know, one of those, you know, like senior career year types. And Lucetta is just like a freakish athlete who they really couldn't figure out where to play until this year. And he's kind of settled into like the DE linebacker role. He plays middle linebacker, though, when Brooks has to go out. But yeah, he makes like two or three freakish plays a game, it seems like. Number 40, if you're ever watching Penn State play.
Yeah, well, they had that role for, I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden, the draft pick who set out last year.
The kid who went to the Ravens. Oh, no, you're talking about Micah Parsons.
Micah Parsons. They had that role for Micah Parsons, who was like a top five, like, super prospect at DE. And they made him like an outside linebacker DE, and like use the fact that he could get away with stuff that most linebackers can't to kind of play their cover three system very dangerously if you don't have someone who can do that. And then last year they're doing that with Lakita, and Lakita was not able to do the things that, you know, Micah Parsons could do, but they rolled
obviously.
With it. Yeah, they rolled it anyway. And then this year he's doing it, which is, I mean, If they unlock that, I mean, that makes this defense, I think, really underrated. Especially because I like a lot of the guys in their secondary. Brisker obviously is a star player. So, I mean, we got to start talking about Penn
State. Castro Fields has been there forever at cornerback. He's got a lot of experience back there.
I know he's going to the Lions. This is what happens with those guys. But yeah, they're good in the secondary. They're good up front, and I think we have to start talking about Penn State as like a very legit defense.
Yeah,
all
absolutely.
Right.
I mean, I didn't see any post-game win expectancy numbers, but I mean, it felt like, you know, it felt like they were the better team, and we've talked about the Clifford injury before. It feels like if Clifford had been able to play the whole game, they would have been able to squeeze out 10 or 14 more points in the second half, and they would have been able to win this game. The other thing worth noting is field position, as always in an Iowa game, came into play big time. They won the field position battle, 32-yard line their drives versus 23 for Penn State. That doesn't really tell the whole story, because it seemed like the whole time Roberson was in the game, it felt like they were backed up. They were backed up twice to end the first half right when he got into the game. And then the final 12 minutes of the game was just crazy. It was Penn State had the ball at their own two, then Iowa had it at midfield, then Penn State had it at their own 25, and then they had like a bunch of false starts and a chop block penalty, so they're punting from their own four. Iowa gets the ball at Penn State's 43, then again Penn State gets the ball at the six. I mean, so...
Well, I mean,
they just,
don't get in
a
land war in Asia,
game,
and don't get into a punting battle
game,
with 36 Iowa.
36 snaps out of 40 were in Iowa territory. That was pretty bad for Penn State.
All right, why don't we move on to the other somewhat competitive game of the week, which was not that competitive. It was Michigan State 31, Rutgers 13. This was a 14-13 game in the second quarter when Jalen Naylor got his third long touchdown. Yes, his third long touchdown. He had 63 and 65-yard touchdown. And the third one was just like he came off the line like nothing was happening, and they ran a flea flicker, and the cornerback was like, "I guess I don't have to do anything on this play." And then Naylor just went right by him And then in the second half, they start that off with a 94-yard rush from Kenneth Walker, and then they just kind of shut it down and ease it out the rest of the way.
That's the third touchdown Michigan State has scored on a flea flicker this year. I think teams should probably start expecting that. I don't know. This actually was a competitive game, and it was 21-13, and I was getting like Michigan State Nebraska vibes there because, and some Michigan Rutgers vibes there because Michigan State's first two drives of the second half are both three and outs that lost yardage, you know, and you're like, well, you know, with the way they can punt the ball, you know, Rutgers can maybe with some field position figure out how to get the tying touchdown up there, and then the second I thought that. That's when the Kenneth Walker 94-yard touchdown run happened. And, yeah, 28-13, you just felt Rutgers wasn't going to be able to figure out how to score 15 points. So,
yeah, I thought this game, you can literally just watch the highlights on ESPN, and you'll pretty much get everything that you need. There was nothing else except for Shamin Jones pretty much abused Michigan State's secondary, so that's a little thing to keep an eye on. I think that they're, as much as I respect Penn State's secondary, I'm starting to think that Michigan, no disrespect, but I think that Michigan State's maybe a little weaker than their schedule has shown so far.
That's disrespect.
They haven't really bumped into a lot of well-oiled machines as far as offense, and in fact, their next game is going to be against Indiana, so they're probably going to put up decent defensive numbers again without really, you know, being tested, but you know, they had a lot of problems with Nebraska. Derek King sort of had some moments against them. But they're just not, you know, the first half of their schedule, they're just not playing the top offenses yet in the league. And, you know, they're going to be tested big time down the stretch. But
yeah, they've given up.
I'd like to think Indiana will give them a little bit of a challenge, especially with the week off. But that offense has been just so pop gunny. I just can't imagine they won't play right in Michigan State's hands.
Yeah. All right. I guess Wisconsin 24, Illinois nothing.
Jalen Berger left. That was kicked off the team. I thought that was interesting. The running back that I thought was their best running back is now gone.
Well, that would explain his deployment against us. 491 yards for Wisconsin, 93 for Illinois. I guess that makes us feel slightly better about our performance against Wisconsin's defense. It looks even more legit than it already looked. I don't know.
Wisconsin had 101 yards in penalties. So they had more penalty yards than Illinois had total yards.
Oh, what kind of Rucker is that?
I don't know.
D'Antonio Rucker?
Yeah, D'Antonio Rucker. I like that. Speaking of Rutgers, can we do a little quick check-in on Arthur Sitkowski, who replaced Brandon Peters in this game?
Oh, no. No.
He went 8 for 27 for 55 yards.
Oh, God.
And at one point in the game, Illinois' passing line for a team was 3 for 19 for 12 yards. And Sitkowski had missed his first 12 passes in a row.
I mean, this is all we have to talk about this week. It's either this or Maryland, Ohio State.
No, we don't need to talk about that game.
I've got one more Illinois futility thing. Their first seven drives, they only had four first downs, and three of them were because of Wisconsin penalties. That got us into the fourth quarter.
I guess we should mention Ohio State 66, Maryland slightly less than that. Yeah. I don't know what to say, except I guess it's disappointing that Ohio State's defense has decided that they aren't going to be that bad. I don't think they're that great. They did give up 330-some yards to a Maryland team. That kind of seems like they're circling the drain. But, they're just not giving up, like, multiple long touchdowns every week anymore, and I missed that phase. That was somewhat entertaining.
They got to be ready for Michigan now, so.
Probably.
Yeah, I lied, by the way, about their second quarterback, because Kyle McCord and Jack Miller both got in, and the five-star did not, so.
I think McCord is also a five-star, so.
Oh, well, yeah.
They're all five-stars. Yeah, their defense, so, you know, a couple weeks ago we mentioned how poorly their rankings were, We wanted to see how they could climb against weak competition. They've gone from 103rd, 104th, and 89th in yards per play, yards per rush, and yards per pass to 45th, 43rd, and 47th in all those. So bottom third to just cracking the top third. But again, Akron, Rutgers, Maryland, you know, I don't know if those are necessarily the teams that can pressure them. Although we had some hope for Maryland's offense, but we have to remind ourselves every time September ends that Maryland only averages 18 points per game under Loxley in Big Ten play.
So that's, aside from one possession to end the half, Ohio State drives went touchdown, 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 field goal. And then in the fourth quarter, they got stopped. They went four and out. They got stopped on downs.
That just took me to the back to the Andrew Dale Gracias advertisement we used to have. You're just like, every day we work.
Yes.
We work touchdown. Ohio State scores touchdown. Jackson Smith Najiba has to be mentioned with Olave and Jarrett Wilson.
Stop. All
we
right.
We work.
We don't want to dwell on this.
In the darkness.
We're not going to dwell on it.
Yeah.
They ended up gaining 92% of their available yards.
All right.
At least Maryland's dead.
There's no reason to continue this conversation, Jamie, so we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I'm Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook. Call the coaches, Scott. Maybe they'll let you share this win.
Good guys.
Yep. But
you don't want to mention Alabama at all because it was so nice to kind of get to the end of our game and have like one nice thing happen after our game.
No.